Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call will be recorded, and I'll be standing by should you need any assistance. It's now my pleasure to turn the call over to Matt Gardner. Please go ahead, sir.
Welcome, and thank you all for dialing in. My name's Matt Gardner. I'm the Executive Director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. For those of you who aren't familiar with us, ITEP is a nonprofit research group focusing on fairness and sustainability in state and federal taxes. We've been around since 1980. We were created at a time when it was clear from the experience of states like California with their Proposition 13 that state policymakers were being forced to make policy decisions without access to hard data about the impact of these decisions on revenues and, importantly, on tax fairness. For more than 30 years, we've been working to fill this informational gap in the states to make sure that policymakers, the media, and the general public have basic information about the impact of proposed reforms at their fingertips. The unique tool we rely on that lets us play this role is a microsimulation computer model, which lets us estimate the impact of basically any tax proposal you can think of at the state or federal level. We're most widely known for our 50-state comparison of state tax fairness. It's a report called Who Pays that we release regularly. We're going to be releasing a new edition of this report next month. And what it's going to show is that virtually every state has an upside-down tax system, imposing the highest effective tax rates on the very poorest residents and allowing the very best-off individuals to pay lower tax rates than everyone else. Past editions of this report have served as the basic yardstick used by policymakers and the media to evaluate tax fairness issues in their states. But our state policy team also spends a lot of time evaluating ongoing state tax reform plans. And in the past year, we've done so in more than 30 states in which there were high-profile tax battles ranging from Maine to Kansas to California. So by now, it's probably not news to any of you that after a high-stakes general election in November, the debate over tax reform is really shifting into high gear as we head into 2013. But at a time when most attention is focused on the battle over the so-called fiscal cliff that's being waged in Washington, D.C. right now, we think there's an equally interesting and very likely just as consequential debate emerging in state houses across the nation. Today we're going to give you a sneak preview of what we think may be a year to remember in state tax policy. I'm going to say a few words first about the recent electoral changes that are bringing this debate to the forefront right now. Then you're going to hear from Carl Davis, a senior policy analyst here at ITEP, who will explain why state tax reform is a vital issue from a policy perspective, and who will walk you through some basic principles for sensible tax reform that we think state policymakers should have in mind as they're tackling these thorny issues. And finally, we're going to hear from Meg Weehy, our state policy director, who will share her encyclopedic knowledge of the dozens of states in which there's a strong possibility that tax changes will be enacted in the year to come. Lastly, we'll open up the discussion for your questions. This agenda is also available on the landing page for this call on our website at itep.org. We're going to try to keep our opening comments under 30 minutes. So I will ask that you hold all questions until the three of us have finished with our opening remarks. So tax reform is always a topic that's brewing in state houses. There's nothing new there. For much of the past decade, there's been a fair amount of legislative interest in options for reforming the various taxes state governments levy. But the big shifts in partisan control that we saw in last month's elections are, we think, likely to bring this issue to the forefront nationwide next year. The latest count is that 37 states now have unified one-party control of both the legislature and the governorship. This is more than we've seen in about 60 years. And even in some of the other states that remain nominally divided, there are examples like Missouri, where one party has a supermajority in both houses of the legislature, that may let them operate pretty independently of the governor's veto. These are the reasons why we think a lot of state tax proposals that haven't gained much traction in the past will likely get a serious hearing in 2013. Now, on one level, we're thrilled that tax issues are receiving so much scrutiny right now. Indeed, tax reform is long overdue at the state level, and even before most states plunged into recession in 2008, state tax systems across the nation faced long-standing structural flaws that threatened their long-term yield and their fairness. I'm going to now turn it over to Carl to discuss some of these problems and some potential solutions, and then Meg will tell us whether states are actually likely to reach for these sensible solutions in 2013.
All right. Thanks, Matt. So I'll start by talking about four major problems with state tax systems that any good tax reform package should address, and I'll try to use some examples of how these issues have actually been approached in the states. For those of you that have seen the briefing materials for this call, you'll see a little bit of discussion about these topics in the policy brief that we shared. The first major problem that tax reform needs to address is related to revenue or the adequacy of a tax system. So basically, are the taxes raising enough money to fund the schools, the roads, everything else that residents are willing to pay for, the reason we pay taxes? The biggest story here is closely tied to the economy. The states have definitely been seeing some revenue growth on the whole over these last few years, but unless you're in the middle of a natural resource boom like North Dakota's, the growth has usually been much slower than in years past. Overall, state revenues overall aren't even back to where they were before the recession. They're actually 5% lower now than they were in 2008, once you account for inflation. And the biggest way states have responded to this revenue shortfall has been with big cuts. So the federal stimulus money was mostly gone last year, and states relied on spending cuts in their budgets to close to three-quarters of their total budget shortfalls. Altogether, since the recession began, state budgets have been cut by more than $290 billion. So with all that in mind, the first question you need to ask about tax reform is how it's going to impact the state's budget. Will it help state revenues rebound and restore some of the services that we've seen cut these last few years, or is it going to require even more cuts on top of what we've already witnessed? A lot of lawmakers have taken the last few years of revenue growth as a sign that tax cuts are suddenly affordable. So take Oklahoma, for example, where the top income tax rate was recently cut and where lawmakers are trying to pile on a much bigger income tax cut next year. But per-student spending on education in Oklahoma is down, actually, 20%, even though they're talking about tax cuts, and they're basically looking to dig the revenue hole created by the Great Recession even deeper. The second issue that tax reform needs to address is sustainability, and this one's even harder to get lawmakers interested in, which is why it's so important that the rest of us take it very seriously. A sustainable tax system doesn't just produce enough revenue to fund government between now and the next election. It actually does that over the long term, so we can continue to have good schools and safe roads, even as the cost of providing those things inevitably grows over time. The perfect example of an unsustainable tax is the cigarette tax. It's levied as a flat amount per pack that doesn't grow with inflation, and the population of people paying cigarette taxes is shrinking as smoking becomes less and less popular. Fortunately for us, nobody's trying to fund their entire government with a cigarette tax, but the taxes we do rely on, like the sales tax and the income tax, have some pretty big holes in them that actually keep them from growing at a reasonable rate. For example, with the sales tax, we see online shopping absolutely booming. It's going to grow 45% in just the next 4 years. But we also see a lot of states that aren't using all the tools at their disposal to ensure that the sales tax applies to all online purchases. An even bigger problem relates to how sales taxes have huge blind spots when it comes to intangible services. Sales taxes almost always apply to toothpaste and furniture and all the tangible things people were buying half a century ago when the sales tax laws were written. But sales taxes often don't even recognize the existence of intangible services like haircuts and car repairs and all the services that Americans spend more and more of their money on today. Corporate taxes, we see a very similar problem. They're designed to apply to business models from a century ago in many cases. And state personal income taxes, they have big carve-outs for some of the fastest growing pieces of personal income in our economy, like retirement income and capital gains. So when you're looking at any tax reform idea, it's always important to ask about its effect not just on the current year's budget debate, but on how the state's long-term outlook is going to change as a result of that reform. And this is especially important because, as I said, state taxes and their long-term outlook isn't particularly good in a lot of cases. If you want an example of a state that's totally ignored the issue of sustainability recently, and there are a lot of them, but one you could look to is Arizona. A lot of lawmakers there wanted to enact a new tax cut, but they already have a big cut in the sales tax rate going into effect next summer. So to get around this, they decided to very slowly phase in a new tax cut for capital gains income over the course of the next many, many years. Using this tactic means that the lawmakers who voted for this tax cut get to take credit for cutting taxes today, but they're not going to have to deal with the revenue consequences of that decision until much later. It's a more long-term sustainability issue. The third problem that tax reform needs to address is fairness. Matt already mentioned some of our research showing that virtually every state tax system in the country is upside down. It requires the poorest families to spend more of their household budgets on taxes than any other group. This is really a serious problem with state tax systems because it means that state taxes can push some families into poverty and that they require far less of the upper income taxpayers who've seen their income growing most in recent years. Let's just dive into a couple examples of how fairness can come up in state tax debates. So in Indiana, we've seen the governor propose what he calls an across-the-board tax cut. That doesn't actually tell you very much about the plan's actual effects on tax fairness. The question that needed to be asked here, and the one that we decided to answer using our computer tax model, was how the benefits of the governor's plan would actually shake out among Indiana residents with varying abilities to afford their tax bills. So specifically, what the governor's proposed is cutting the state's only major progressive tax, the personal income tax. And our analysis showed that his across-the-board plan would actually be tilted heavily in favor of the state's highest income residents. More than a quarter of the benefits would go to just the richest 5% of taxpayers, and one in three of the state's poorest residents would see no tax cut at all. And that's despite the fact that the poor people in Indiana face some of the highest overall taxes in the entire country. And yet somehow this plan has actually been labeled as across the board in a lot of cases. Oklahoma is another example of where the labels we've seen used to describe big tax debates often obscure really important fairness considerations. So the debate last year was framed around how to quote unquote cut taxes. But using our tax model, we asked whether everyone was really going to see a tax cut under the plans being discussed. And we showed that many of the plans would actually raise taxes on, in some cases, up to half of all Oklahomans, including many of the poor. In large part, it was this realization that led to last year's tax debate falling apart in Oklahoma, and it's a reason why Oklahoma is still on the agenda for 2013, and they'll be looking at tax reform again, as Meg will talk about in just a minute. Fourth and finally, I want to talk about simplicity, another important goal of tax reform. I don't think you're going to find a lot of disagreement that state tax codes are too complicated. A lot of times, though, you hear this as an argument in favor of flattening the income tax, as if the extra bit of arithmetic that's needed to calculate your tax under a graduated rate structure is what's forcing so many Americans to go hire accountants when they do their taxes. This is really just a distraction. The real complication in state tax codes comes about because of the slew of different special tax breaks and tax shelters we see in the code. And so the question you need to ask about a tax reform that purports to be benefiting simplicity is whether it's actually going to make tax filing any easier. We're at a point now where any type of income you can earn can be subject to totally different tax rules. So whether you're earning wages or capital gains or interest or dividends or pension income or business income or anything else you can possibly think of, there are different tax rules for all these different types of income. And a lot of this has to do with lawmakers trying to accomplish every objective they can imagine through special tax breaks. There are tax breaks designed to do everything from promoting home ownership to encouraging bird hunting in some states. Any true tax reform has to reduce this complication by broadening the tax base, wiping out the tax breaks that are least effective in accomplishing their goals. This doesn't mean that every tax break has to be eliminated. There are a lot of basic exemptions and credits that prevent the working poor from being taxed deeper into poverty, and we think those are definitely examples of breaks that are worth keeping. But for every break like that, there are a dozen more that are expensive, unproven, definitely unproven, and often unnecessary. The only time those breaks tend to get debated is as part of these big tax reform discussions that we're expecting to come up in 2013. So those are the four major issues that need to be discussed as part of any tax reform debate: adequacy, sustainability, fairness, and simplicity. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a fifth issue that's often touted as justification for cutting taxes under the guise of tax reform, and that's the supposed economic benefits of low taxes. We saw this as a central theme in the tax debates in Kansas and Oklahoma and Tennessee last year, and we're expecting to see much more of the same from North Carolina, Indiana, and a lot more states this year, as Meg will tell you in just a second. The basic idea here is that lower taxes are allegedly a huge incentive to work and to invest, and that refusing to levy an income tax in particular is supposed to act like a magnet that draws entrepreneurs away from Silicon Valley and towards no-tax states like South Dakota and Wyoming instead. And to support this claim, we've seen a lot of so-called research from ALEC and other conservative groups, and in particular an economist named Arthur Laffer that asserts basically that none of the economic success we've seen in states like Alaska can be traced to their natural resource endowment, and all of it is a result of them not levying an income tax. Of course, this is absurd. There are a handful of states with unique advantages in terms of tourism or natural resources that have found unusual ways to pay for their governments, but this doesn't mean that ditching your income tax and paying for it with worse schools and crumbling roads is the path to prosperity. Unfortunately, some of these studies have frankly just included very simplistic analyses that purport to show exactly the opposite, and we've made it a point to try to debunk these studies whenever we have a chance to, and you can actually find some of our work debunking those studies on our website. Before you go rushing to our website, though, let me turn it over now to our state policy director, Meg Weehy. She's going to talk more about the specific tax battles we see coming up in just the next few weeks, and she's going to try to point out some trends where similar ideas are being discussed in a lot of different states.
All right. Thanks, Carl. We think it's quite possible that lawmakers in more than 30 states could take on tax reform in some shape or form in 2013. But there are about 15 states where we think overhauling the tax code will be the top priority of governors and other state leadership, and those are the ones that we're watching the most closely. These proposals range from the one that Carl just mentioned, the revisiting a failed attempt from this year to pare back the personal income tax in Oklahoma, to replacing North Carolina's income tax with a broader and higher sales tax, to a plan in Minnesota that would broaden the sales tax, corporate, and personal income tax bases and increase taxes paid by the wealthiest. Most of these proposals are still in the early stages, and in many cases, governors have said they'll unveil more specifics of their budgets at the start of next year. But we have enough to go on in most states to speculate on the direction lawmakers will take with their proposals. And keep in mind as well that these proposals are likely to go through several variations before agreement is reached between lawmakers, which was certainly the case in the tax cut package that happened in Kansas this year. With that said, for your reference, we have provided you with a brief preview of state tax policy proposals likely to be considered in 2013, which you can find on our website. So just as no two state tax systems are identical, no two proposals we've been monitoring are exactly the same. But there are some similarities between proposals, and there are three overarching trends that have emerged. First, there are proposals that would sharply reduce or eliminate one or more taxes and replace some or all of that lost revenue by expanding or increasing another tax. Then there are proposals that would significantly reduce the personal income tax paid by individuals and businesses. And then there are those proposals that we consider to be real tax reform, ones that will fix tax code structural flaws rather than dismantling or eliminating entire revenue sources and calling it reform. So I'll start with those proposals that are reducing one tax or eliminating one tax and replacing it with another. We like to call such proposals tax swaps, and there are at least eight states with swap plans under discussion, including Arkansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Nebraska, North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, and Virginia. Most commonly, tax swaps shift a state's reliance away from a progressive personal income tax to a regressive sales tax. These proposals range from entirely eliminating the personal income tax, and in some cases also corporate income tax, estate tax, or other taxes, to sharply reducing tax rates, maybe converting a graduated rate structure to a flat rate, or making other changes to significantly pare back the personal income tax. Most of these proposals plan to make up some or all of the revenue lost from eliminating the personal income tax by raising the sales tax rate and broadening the sales tax base to include services and other exempted goods such as food. Proponents of these proposals will claim that replacing income taxes with a broader and higher sales tax will make their state tax codes fair, simpler, and put them in a better position for economic growth, but that's absolutely not the case. These proposals will create significant tax cuts for wealthy households and large tax increases for low and moderate income households. They'd also threaten the state's ability to provide critical services now and over time. Often these proposals will start out with the goal of being revenue neutral, so meaning that the state will raise close to the same amount under the new structure as it did from the old, But even if the intent is to make up lost revenue from cutting or eliminating one tax with another, these plans are at risk of losing serious amounts of revenue due in part to disagreement amongst lawmakers about how to pay for the cuts or not wanting to raise the sales tax rate above a certain amount. North Carolina is one state where lawmakers are considering a tax swap next year, and the proposal there is pretty simple. It would eliminate North Carolina's personal and corporate income taxes and replace those taxes with a broader and higher sales tax. North Carolina's personal income tax brings in more than $10 billion a year and makes up more than half of the state's general fund. The corporate income tax brings in another $1 billion. So it would take some major changes to the sales tax to make up for that magnitude of a revenue loss. ITEP did an analysis of a few different tax swap scenarios in North Carolina, and we found that if North Carolina lawmakers move forward with a plan to replace the income tax and replace a whole with a sales tax and make up 100% of that lost revenue using the current sales tax structure, the sales tax rate would have to be increased from 4.75% to almost 14%. That's the state sales tax rate. The richest top 1% of North Carolina taxpayers would see a tax reduction equivalent to 4% of their incomes, while the poorest bottom 20% would pay close to 6% more of their incomes in taxes. Even if North Carolina lawmakers broaden the sales tax base to include some services, which is part of their plan, we still think the sales tax rate would have to be increased significantly or spending would have to be reduced. The next trend or category of proposals that we're seeing are those that would significantly reduce the personal income tax paid by individuals and businesses, so just sort of looking at the personal income tax on its own. States that fall into this camp include Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. The drive here is to cut personal income tax rates, though there is some variation to proposals as to whether they would include some base broadening within the income tax to pay for those cuts, or the proposals would be overall revenue losers. The tax cut package enacted in Kansas this year did both. Lawmakers partially paid for reductions in income tax rates and a complete elimination of business income from the tax by eliminating some low-income credits. But the plan also lost more than $700 million in annual revenue. At the time, Governor Brownback promised the tax cuts would bring tens of thousands of new jobs to the state and would easily pay for themselves with accelerated economic growth in the first year or two. But the reality is that tax cuts cost money, and Governor Brownback is now indicating he's looking for solutions to patch that gap, including a temporary sales tax hike and a reduction in the state earned income tax credit, which was protected in the plan this year. In most cases, proposed personal income tax cuts won't actually cut taxes for everybody, even if that's the goal. In fact, many proposals, as again was the case in Kansas, would raise taxes for low and moderate income households while cutting them for wealthy households and businesses. As Carl alluded to before, Oklahoma lawmakers are once again going to be pursuing a reduction in their state's personal income tax rates next year. There were many variations of cut proposals this year in Oklahoma, but most included some changes to the income tax base to pay for the rate reductions. Some of the proposals in Oklahoma would have eliminated provisions of the income tax that reduced taxes for low and moderate income households, such as getting rid of the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit, resulting in a tax hike on the poorest residents. Other Oklahoma proposals would have repealed some inefficient business tax incentives and the deduction for state income taxes paid, which were both sensible reform ideas. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and the new Assembly Speaker there have said in their own words that they will be pursuing aggressive reductions in the personal income tax next year. It is unclear if their approach will be across-the-board rate reductions or if they'll pay for those rate cuts by eliminating deductions, exemptions, or credits. The driving motivation behind both the tax swap and these personal income tax proposals is that fifth bogus issue Carl discussed earlier. Lawmakers in these states believe that reducing taxes overall or eliminating income taxes and replacing them with a sales tax will lead to greater economic activity and eventually higher revenue. This motivation is misguided, and no state should expect improved economic growth to result from reduction in its income tax rate or the elimination of a tax. While many of these proposals may contain some elements of reform, like broadening the sales tax base or eliminating loopholes, The sad truth is that taken as a whole, these proposals fail to address the structural problems with their state codes and fail to improve upon most of the key principles Carl discussed earlier. If the tax swap or personal income tax cut proposals being discussed in these states get enacted, those state tax codes will become even more unfair, inadequate, and unsustainable. In other words, these proposals, for the most part, would cut taxes for wealthy households and businesses at the expense of low and middle income households and would certainly reduce the availability of revenue for spending priorities next year and into the future. However, there are some good faith efforts at giving a serious look at flaws with state tax codes and proposing changes to solve those problems Carl discussed, with a particular focus on broadening tax bases to make taxes more sustainable and better reflect our modern economy. This is our third category, those proposals that we consider to be real tax reform, ones that fix tax code structural problems rather than dismantling or eliminating entire revenue sources and calling it reform. The states we think are tackling reform in this way are Kentucky, Minnesota, and Utah, and it's possible we'll see comprehensive revenue plans as well from California, New York, and Massachusetts. After months of taking a careful look at every component of Kentucky's tax code, the governor-appointed tax commission there issued more than 50 recommendations just this week that, with very few exceptions, would make Kentucky's tax system more sustainable, adequate, and fair. Members of that commission recommended broadening the income tax base by limiting itemized deductions for wealthy households and lowering the very large exclusion for pension income and phasing out that exclusion for high-wealth retirees. They would use some of the revenue gain from base broadening to slightly lower income tax rates. They would also use some of that revenue to adopt a new 15% state earned income tax credit for working families. The recommendations also include broadening the sales tax base to some services. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton is another governor who recognizes his state's tax system is broken and is expected to unveil a major tax reform proposal early next year. The governor's revenue commissioner has been traveling the state talking about the problems plaguing the current system, which are similar to those Carl discussed. He's been talking about the fact that Minnesota's system does not reflect the modern economy, it is out of balance, relying too heavily on property taxes. The system is increasingly unfair as tax responsibility has been shifted to those with the least ability to pay. The system is overly complex, and the system is riddled with expensive and ineffective tax breaks, making it less sustainable. Governor Dayton's reform plan is expected to address these problems and will likely include eliminating many tax breaks, broadening the personal income, corporate income, and sales tax bases, and asking the wealthiest to pay a higher share of their income in taxes. We think New York and California will be other states to watch in this regard. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's tax commission will begin meeting early next year, and California's Senate president has said he wants to look at base broadening tax reform next year as well. There are at least two other trends worth a quick mention. There are a number of state lawmakers who will be pursuing plans to reduce or eliminate property taxes for either businesses or residents, and many other states will be looking to revamp their gas taxes. For the sake of time, I'm not going to go into detail on these, but they are included in the handout that we put together on state tax reform trends for next year, and they're also mentioned in the write-ups about each state that we provided. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to Matt to wrap us up before we take questions.
Thanks, Meg. Well, as you've gathered from listening to Carl and Meg, we think 2013 is going to be a pretty exciting year for state tax battles. You're going to see a mix of forward-thinking efforts to make tax systems more sustainable and politically motivated efforts to shrink the size of government. We hope that our work in the states will be helpful to you all in your work on these issues going forward, and we certainly hope that you'll be in touch with Ann Singer, our communications director, as these debates unfold. And since tax fairness is likely to be a touchstone in many of these states, we are especially pleased that, as I mentioned earlier in the call, we're going to be releasing next month a new edition of our Who Pays report, which measures the underlying fairness, or lack thereof, in each state's tax system right now, acting as a very good yardstick for evaluating potential reforms. We'll be happy to talk more with you about this report leading up to its release. And with that, I will open it up for questions.
Thank you. And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, to ask a question, that's star and one. And we'll take our first question from Mike Hasten with Louisiana Gannett Newspaper. Your line is open.
In Louisiana, Governor Bobby Jindal, ever since he came in office 5 years ago, is repeatedly cutting business taxes. And each year, the state's revenue keeps dropping. There's mid-year cuts and then more cuts when the new budgets are adopted. Do you see what are they saying to you as to what they're planning to do this session, and will it actually make any improvements?
Meg, do you want to field that one?
Sure. I think, I mean, the specifics are still a little unclear in Louisiana. I think that the governor has certainly made it clear that tax reform will be one of his top priorities next year, and has charged his revenue commissioner and the director of the Economic Development Department there to start sort of traveling the state and pitching some ideas. We've heard, there was also the Tax Expenditure Commission that looked at some of the tax spending in the state earlier this fall and issued a report. I think that, I mean, it's a little difficult to completely speculate, but I think it is clear that the governor's plan will likely include some of the base broadening options that we talked about. We'll look to broaden the sales tax base. Will likely recommend getting rid of some of the deductions and exemptions that exist in the income tax, and will use a lot of the revenue raised from the base broadening to significantly lower the income tax. But at this point, I'm unclear as to what sort of plans they have in regards to business taxes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Once again, to ask a question at star and one. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. I'm currently showing no questions at this time. It looks like we do have a follow-up from Mike Hasten with Louisiana Gannett Newspaper. Your line is open.
Okay. Do you, in your studies, do you see that actually lowering business taxes as has been done here actually improves the economic environment? It doesn't seem to have worked here. In fact, our business taxes are bottoming out, and
right.
Other revenues are too.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it's when you – there are a multitude of examples of business leaders explaining flat out what matters to them when they go to – decide where to expand or where to locate and those kind of things. And taxes are oftentimes very near the bottom of the list. They're not the largest component of the costs of doing business. I mean, it's important to have a well-educated workforce, to have access to good transportation systems to move your products. And to the extent that you're just cutting business taxes and taking that revenue loss and not replacing it, I mean, it's other services that businesses rely on just like the rest of us are going to suffer. So you can't just cut business taxes in isolation and expect that to be some kind of economic panacea.
Right. I think an additional thing to consider in thinking about the impact of business tax cuts is that at the state level, you really can't think about the impact of business tax cuts taken in isolation. Every tax reduction has to be paid for. Is this going to be done by hiking other taxes, as appears to be the direction Kansas is going this year? Is it going to be done by cutting spending on the infrastructure that makes a state a good place to be? You know, these questions have to be answered. And so we think it's fundamentally misleading for policymakers to try to make claims about the economic impact of business tax cuts taken on their own.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you identify? I'm sorry. Who was speaking there?
Sorry. This is Matt Gardner.
Okay, Matt. And the first was speaking was.
Carl Davis.
Carl. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
I would like to turn it back to Matt Gardner for any closing remarks.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for taking the time today. We'll be uploading all materials related to this call, including the details that Meg mentioned, to our landing page at www.itep.org. And I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. This concludes our call.